Welcome to the new episode of American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to the latest episode in our season on Haunted Hollywood, which is, as always, hosted and produced by Cody Back and written and performed by Troy Taylor. That's me. As we near the end of this season, finally, we're going to be wrapping things up, we hope, next month with both full and bonus episodes, taking you on a weekly walk down the back streets of Hollywood during the Halloween month of October. We still have some more stories to share before this season comes to an end, so be ready for murder, mayhem, broken hearts, shattered dreams, and unsolved crimes. But if you've missed any of the show this season, or if this is your first time listening, you'll want to go back to episode 70 of the podcast, which will get you caught up on everything that's already happened. Just be warned that the episodes in this season are definitely not suitable for all listeners. So if you continue on from here, whatever happens, well, that's on you. This episode alone is one to remember, a tale of the life and death of one of America's top pinup girls who died a horrible and violent death, not in Hollywood, but on a lonely highway near Biloxi, Mississippi. It's a story that has a little bit of everything. A brainy beauty, publicity stunts, a mysterious death, a satanic curse, a haunted house, and, well, I'll be honest with you, boobs. So hang on tight. It's going to be a wild ride. She was born Vera Jane Palmer in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania on April 19th of 1933. When she was only 3 years old, her father Herbert died of a heart attack while driving with his wife and daughter in the car. Luckily, they walked away without a scratch. After his death, her mother, also named Vera, worked as a school teacher, and in 1939, she remarried and the family moved to Dallas, Texas. Her daughter, who went by the name Jane, had a great passion in life. She wanted to be an actress. She took theater classes in high school, and after graduating, she enrolled at the Southern Methodist University in Dallas, majoring in both theater and physics. It was an odd combination, but Jane was incredibly brilliant. She just usually chose to hide out behind her pretty face. In January 1950, Jane secretly married Paul Mansfield, and the young couple moved to Austin, where Jane enrolled at the University of Texas. She spent the next couple of years juggling motherhood and college classes while her husband was in the Army. In 1953, she landed her first stage role, appearing in a production of Death of a Salesman. She also won a series of beauty contests, but few had any idea just how smart she was. She had an IQ of 163, spoke five languages, and was a classically trained pianist and violinist. She later admitted, though, that she knew the public didn't care about her brains. They were more interested in her looks and the size of her breasts. Paul Mansfield, a perfect example of manhood in the 1950s, had hoped that Jane would lose interest in acting and stay home to have children. They had one baby, Jane Marie, but he wanted more, and probably wanted Jane barefoot and in the kitchen all day. But that wasn't going to work for Jane Mansfield. Her dreams weren't much bigger than that. When Paul finally realized Jane wasn't going to give up on those dreams, he moved with her to Los Angeles so she could try and start a movie career. Between working in a variety of odd jobs, Jane studied drama at UCLA. Her film career began with bit parts at Warner Brothers, which had signed her after one of its talent scouts had seen her in a production at the Pasadena Playhouse. She started with small roles that showed off her good looks, but then she won a larger, dramatic part in a film called The Burglar. Unfortunately, the movie, which showed off Jane's dramatic chops, wasn't released until 2 years later, when Jane's career was at its peak and she was known for a very different kind of role. Her big break came from a stage production called Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter, in which she first appeared wearing nothing but a towel. She appeared in the show for 13 months and even won a Theater World Award for her performance in 1956. After her theater run ended, Jane was signed by 20th Century Fox and made a huge splash in the comic film The Girl Can't Help It, in which she played an outrageously voluptuous, tone-deaf girlfriend of a retired racketeer. The film featured some early performances by Fats Domino, The Platters, and Little Richard. introducing rock and roll to many movie audiences. In May 1956, Jane played a straight dramatic role in the John Steinbeck-based film, The Wayward Boss. She wanted to get away from the dumb blonde image that the studio had dumped on her and establish herself as a serious actress. She won a Golden Globe for New Star of the Year, beating out Carol Baker and Natalie Wood. In 1957, she reprised her stage role in Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter with Tony Randall and Joan Blondell. This film was also hugely successful for Jane and cemented her image as the blonde comic relief. She realized there was no use fighting it. She couldn't escape that image. If you got it, flaunt it, they say, and that's exactly what Jane did. During the heady period that followed, Jane was not only one of the most popular actresses in Hollywood, she also received more press than anyone else, including Marilyn Monroe and Mamie Van Doren, the other wildly popular blonde bombshells of the era. In Jane's first year at Fox, more than 2,000 photos of her appeared in newspapers and magazines. In January 1958, Jane divorced Paul Mansfield and 5 days later, married actor, bodybuilder, and Mr. Universe title holder Mickey Hargitay. Jane had first met Mickey when he was starring in a body stage show produced by Mae West at the Latin Quarter in New York City. Shortly after the wedding, they bought a Spanish Mediterranean-style house that had been built in 1929 for singer Rudy Valli. Jane quickly set about to make it her own. First, she decided that the house and the 8-foot wall that surrounded it should be painted pink, her trademark color. To make the wall sparkle in the sun, she had workmen crush sandstone into the paint. When finished, it was impossible for anyone driving down Sunset Boulevard to miss the house, and it earned a nickname, the Pink Palace. To get inside the walls of the mansion, visitors had to pass through tall iron gates with the initials JM twisted into the design. Inside, there was a 12-foot crystal chandelier, a fountain that sprayed pink champagne during parties, a pink heart-shaped bathtub, and pink fur rugs. But of course, the biggest attraction was the pink heart-shaped swimming pool in the backyard. On the bottom, spelled out in mosaic tile, was the message, "I love you, Janie." The pool had been a gift from Mickey, who had also done much of the remodeling on the house. If this place had belonged to anyone else, it would have been an eyesore, but since it was Jane, it just seemed to fit. Jane's career was still at its height at this time. She was stuck in the roles that people loved her for, but she made the best of it, earning most of her publicity for two things, her beauty and her famous breasts. She repeatedly and successfully managed to expose them in carefully staged accidents. On The Tonight Show, host Jack Parr introduced her as, "Here they are, Jane Mansfield." And in 1957, her breasts were part of a notorious publicity stunt that was arranged to deflect attention away from Sophia Loren during a dinner in the Italian star's honor. Photographs of the encounter were published around the world. One image showed Sophia Loren raising an eyebrow at Jane, who was sitting between Sophia and Clifton Webb, as she leaned over the table, allowing her breasts to spill out of her low-cut dress and exposing a nipple. During a film festival party in Berlin, Mickey picked her up so that she could bite some low-hanging grapes from a vine, and both breasts accidentally popped out of her dress. The photograph of the incident became a sensation, appearing in magazines all over the world with the word "censored" hiding her exposed breasts. Tacky? Sure, but it worked, and it kept Jane in the movie magazines. Even so, most of the good roles for Jane had dried up by 1959. She did a lot of independent and foreign films, usually scantily clad, until she decided to slow down and try to rejuvenate her career. She announced that she planned to study acting in New York so that she could attract more serious roles, but by then it was just too late. Her racy publicity had brought her fame, but it also brought about her downfall. Fox did not renew her contract in 1962, but Jane kept working. In 1963, she was the first mainstream American actress to appear nude in the film Promises, Promises. Nude photos taken on the set were published in Playboy magazine, which resulted in an obscenity charge for Hugh Hefner. The film ended up being banned in Cleveland, but enjoyed success across the country. She appeared in more foreign films, but good roles became harder and harder to find. Later in life, she appeared in a number of dismal, low-budget films like The Las Vegas Hillbillies and Panic Button. They were a disaster and an embarrassment for a woman who really deserved a lot better. Jane's marriage to Mickey lasted 5 years. They divorced in Mexico in 1963, but when the legality of it was called into question, they briefly reconciled in October of that year. Well, it didn't work out, and soon after, Jane sued for the Juarez divorce to be declared legal and won. During their marriage, Jane and Mickey had 3 children, Miklos, Zoltan, and Mariska, an actress currently known for her role as Detective Olivia Benson in Law & Order Special Victims Unit. After a divorce from Mickey Hargitay, Jane was linked romantically with singer Nelson Sardelli, but in 1964, she married an Italian-born director named Matteo Ottaviano. They were divorced in July 1966. Jane was now in a bad place. Her career was fading fast, and she was supporting herself and her children doing burlesque and dinner theater. Then in late 1966, she took another step, again hoping to revive her career. Whether this was a serious attempt to find herself or merely another infamous publicity stunt remains in question. Whatever it was, Jane joined the newly formed Church of Satan, founded by Anton LaVey. According to LaVey, Jane had a real interest in exploring the occult, while friends say she was simply curious about it. It's also quite possible she was merely attaching herself to LaVey for the publicity and the attention. The Church of Satan had recently been making headlines and appearing on magazine covers. LaVey was a dashing figure and had become notorious in a very short time. Even those who disliked him respected him as a great showman and promoter. Other celebrities like Sammy Davis Jr. and Forrest J. Ackerman, who founded Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, and others, were photographed with the country's leading Satanists, and Jane may have been looking to get a little free publicity for herself. Photos of Jane and LaVey in his ceremonial robes appeared in magazines as she drank from a chalice, and skulls and daggers surrounded her as props. LaVey was also photographed with Jane at nightclubs and at the Pink Palace, too, which suggests they may have even been friends. LaVey always confessed to being entranced with Jane. He likely saw a connection with her as good publicity for himself, but he took an instant dislike to Jane's boyfriend and attorney, Sam Brody, who she'd started dating soon after her last divorce. Over the next few weeks, the two men clashed several times, and the story goes that LaVey put a curse on Brody, telling him he would be dead within a year. LaVey later said that the curse was supposed to protect Jane from Brody, who was violent and abusive with her. He warned Jane to stay away from Brody, fearing that she might be affected by the curse. But Jane didn't listen. Soon after, Jane and Brody were involved in 2 separate auto accidents. A month later, Jane's son Zoltan accompanied her to Jungleland in Thousand Oaks, California, where she was supposed to pose for publicity photos. And the little boy was mauled by a supposedly tame lion. While in Japan, a collection of her prized jewelry was stolen from her hotel room. In England, she was publicly humiliated and her show was canceled after she was falsely accused of skipping out on her hotel bill. She was charged with income tax evasion in Venezuela, robbed in Las Vegas, and attacked by a mob at Carnival in Rio. On June 22, 1967, Brody was on his way to pick up Jane from a charity lunch when his vehicle was struck by another car. It was badly damaged and Brody was hospitalized with a broken leg and cracked ribs. But this didn't stop Brody from going with Jane on a tour of Southern supper clubs a week later, a decision that would turn out to be fatal. Jane was performing at Gus Stevens Supper Club in Biloxi, Mississippi in late June. After the show, she decided to drive to New Orleans, where she was supposed to appear on a television talk show on the morning of June 29th. They left the club after midnight. Jane was accompanied by Brody, the club's 19-year-old driver, Ron Harrison, and the children, Miklos, Zoltan, and Mariska. Jane's signature pink luggage was loaded in the car, and Jane got into the front seat with Brody and Harrison. She was sitting next to the passenger door. The children were asleep in the back seat as they started driving west on Route 90. The road was shiny and slick from a light rain that had fallen earlier. Ahead of the car, Harrison spotted a white cloud that was coming from a mosquito spraying truck ahead of them on the highway. He slowed down and followed the truck for several minutes, but then became impatient, accelerated, and drove around the truck into the fog. Unable to see clearly, Harrison had no idea that a slow-moving trailer truck was ahead of the mosquito sprayer until the front of his Buick slammed under it. The roof of the car was sheared off and the metal rolled backwards like an opened can. Sam Brody died instantly when he was thrown from the car, and Harrison suffered the same fate. The children, lying down in the back, sustained injuries but survived the crash. When the truck driver, who was unhurt, jumped down from his cab, he immediately spotted the bodies of the two men on the pavement. Glancing back through the Buick's windshield, he saw the battered body of a woman in blood-soaked clothing. Legends state that Jane was decapitated in the crash, but later reports from police officers who investigated the scene discovered that what the truck driver thought was her severed head was actually one of Jane's blonde wigs lying on the pavement. Well, the news of the death stunned fans across the country. Some were quick to cash in on it. Anton LaVey announced that Jane was, quote, a victim of her own frivolity. He'd warned her about the curse and she'd ignored it. During a memorial service held in her honor at the Church of Satan, 30 people reported that a series of amber-colored bulbs suddenly flared up without explanation, but never shattered. LaVey said that it happened because, quote, Jane wanted to let us know she was still with us. Others connected to Jane reported strange happenings. Linda Mudrick, who was Jane's personal maid for many years, often heard Miklos, who had been injured in the accident that took his mother's life, talking to someone when she knew he was alone in his room. He told her he had been talking to his mother, and Mudrick believed that Jane was somehow communicating with the boy from the other side. Weird happenings also occurred around the Pink Palace. Soon after Jane's death, Mickey was involved in a bad accident just after driving out of the gates of the house. Matteo Ottaviano, Jane's third husband, was plagued with troubles. His father had a heart attack, legal problems closed his nightclub, and his best friend was killed. Victor Houston, a young man who worked as Jane's road manager and was a constant visitor at the Pink Palace, died suddenly. Linda Mudrick was also involved in a terrible car accident, and it got worse. Jane's son Miklos and a friend were playing in a toy electric car one afternoon at the Pink Palace, and the little girl leaned back and somehow her long black hair got entangled around an axle. All the hair on the back of her head was torn out by the roots. Had there really been a curse that surrounded Jane Mansfield, and was it still working overtime? Others believe the Pink Palace was simply haunted. Bursting water pipes ruined many pieces of furniture, and plumbers who came to repair the damage were allegedly frightened off by moving objects. One painter said that when he was working in Jane's old room, he felt that someone was watching him, and several times he said someone touched him on the shoulder. Eerie, moaning sounds were often reported, and servants refused to stay on. New ones were hired, but often left after only a few days in the house. Even Linda Mudrick, Jane's longtime companion, finally quit, saying that, quote, I never want to go in that house again. Many came to believe that Jane was still around, angry over the fighting that was going on over her estate. Her spirit, they said, wanted to ensure that her children received their inheritance. Unfortunately, the Pink Palace was sacked by Ottaviano, Jane's third husband, and his attorney. They locked out the children and Jane's parents and then sold the place. The first occupants of the house were a bank president and his family. Right after they moved in, the banker's son found a pink Honda that the late actor Nick Adams had given to Jane during a brief affair. The boys started it up and took it for a spin around the estate and then decided to try it out on the road. Just as he was roaring out of the gates and onto Sunset Boulevard, he was struck by an oncoming car and was killed. The banker and his family allegedly moved out the same day. The singer Cass Elliott of the Mamas and the Papas later bought the house and moved in with her husband. She went to London to record some television commercials and left her husband behind to oversee the redecorating of the mansion. Cass's death occurred while she was away, and as with Jane's supposed decapitation, Cass didn't choke to death on a ham sandwich. She died of a heart attack. The next occupant in the mansion was Beatle Ringo Starr, who had been a fan and friend of Jane's. Although Ringo mostly used the house for parties and only actually lived in it for a short while, he decided pink wasn't really his style and had the exterior of the mansion repainted white. Soon, though, the house began turning pink again. Some said that this was because pink was a hard color to cover, but others claimed it was Jane's presence making herself known. Well, the house was repainted again using a sealer and two coats of paint, but it turned pink once more, much to the bewilderment of paint consultants and chemists. Eventually, though, the house was successfully repainted and remained white for the next two decades or so. In 1977, Welsh singer Engelbert Humperdinck purchased the house. Before moving in, he had the house blessed by a Catholic priest and issued a statement about the haunting in 1980. In 2002, Humperdinck sold the house to developers and it was demolished in November of that year. Before the sale, Humperdinck invited Jane's children for one last visit so that they could remove a keepsake from the house where they grew up. The sons removed most of the wood fireplace that had been installed by their father. Mariska removed an ornamental copper shield from the fireplace in the pool house, in which her father had engraved the words, "Janie, my love will flame for you forever. Mickey." As for Mickey himself, he decided not to return to the house. His only statement was, quote, "As far as I'm concerned, that house died when Jane died." Well, the house may have died, but before he sold the place, Humperdinck did admit that he believed Jane's ghost had returned to the house many times. He often caught the scent of her favorite perfume, rose petals, in the house, and once saw her apparition wearing a long black dress. And then there was the earthquake. After one particular incident, he discovered a section of the yard had settled into the shape of a heart, Jane's favorite design. At first, he blamed it on Jane's ghost, but then discovered that the heart was actually a filled-in wading pool that Jane had built for the children. He likely breathed a sigh of relief. Today, nothing remains of the Pink Palace. There have been no further reports of Jane's ghost, and it seems the hauntings connected to her, like many memories of the vivacious actress, have faded away.
There's one thing that the American Hauntings podcast knows about, and that's mothers. We featured a lot of great mothers in a lot of our episodes. Pearl Curran, Julia Lemp, Sarah Moore, Marie Laveau, Jane Mansfield, Tamsin Donner, Delphine LaLaurie, Belle Gunness. Okay, maybe leave out those last two. But what I'm saying is that with Mother's Day coming soon, you need a truly special gift for your mom because, well, she's not Belle Gunness. So let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that literally turns your mom's life story into a book. So here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your mom a question in her email, the same way she sends you questions about your dating life or when you plan to give her grandkids. Anyway, these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. She replies by either typing in the answers or by recording her own voice. Then MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a keepsake book, and they can create an audiobook that uses her voice recordings, preserving her voice and her stories forever. As anyone who doesn't have their mom around anymore can tell you, having your mother's stories about growing up, being a kid, and overcoming life's challenges will be something that you and your kids will treasure. And let's be honest, your mom has given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a very cool way to share them. Honestly, I decided to try this out for myself, and I sent it to my mom, and she's not exactly a whiz at computers, but she still found it really easy to use. My mom might have had a little more unusual childhood than a lot of mothers do, so I'm really glad to have this. And I think you'll be glad to give one to your mother, too. So check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code HAUNTINGS for 10% off today.
Thank you. right. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Sure. Yeah. No, I enjoyed this episode. I mean, it's a fun episode. It's got a little of everything.
Define fun. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, other than the hideous death.
Yeah. A couple of them. Woman, yeah. You know, all right. Let's talk about it. All right. Thanks for tuning into the American Hauntings Podcast, the show where we discuss history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. We are now in season 5 of the podcast, Haunted Hollywood. I'm your co-host,
Cody
Beck.
It's been like a year.
And with me is my co-host, author, historian, crime buff, calendar buff, and the founder of American Hauntings, Troy Taylor.
I know, and I have no one to blame for this but myself. I'm not blaming you.
You have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm just saying that this has been a long season, but it's almost over. I know I've been saying that for a couple of episodes, but it really is.
Is it that long compared to like some of the others?
I don't know. Maybe not. It just seems long. This seems really long. There's just so many stories.
I know, and I know you could keep going.
Oh, I could. I mean, so I really had to kind of fine tune and go, okay, these are the last 5 stories and we're done. So we are going to finish. Actually, the last episode will be November 2nd, but we're going to do an episode every week in October.
We're just going for it in October.
Yeah, we're going to do one every week. A couple of them will not be like full episodes. It'll be just the stories without our convo at the end. But most of them will be regular episodes. But we will be doing one every week. And we will be ending this season on November 2nd.
Yeah.
After that, we will have a trailer for season 6.
Mm-hmm.
Will be coming. And, of course, our end of the year horror film episode. Oh, and our Halloween episode will be coming in October,
so we have
too.
Two movie episodes coming up.
Yes, we do. End of October, and then we'll do one in December. Will be our end of the year. And then we will start back up again with the regular seasons of the podcast in January.
Yes. And so we do. So at the end of October, we're going to do 70s horror movies.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So
70s, that's
what
our decade
do.
We're in this time.
And then after that, we do end of the year 2021 horror movies.
Yes.
Just for people that might be jumping in at this point.
Yeah.
And yes, we do a lot of movie stuff.
Yeah. The end of the
stuff.
Year, that's always fun.
It is fun.
To start my list over. Now, I know some people have been following along on Letterboxd.
Yes.
Where I keep my reviews, and there's some real dogs. I had a bad run of bad movies there for a while. And really, I could have a lot more, but it's like, you know, I watch the trailer and I go, okay, I am not watching this.
Yeah.
And so that's why it doesn't get on the list. And then I'll watch a trailer and I'll go, this looks pretty good. And then it turns out to be complete garbage. And so it gets a bad review. But I've also seen some stuff that has been really great, though. There have been Candyman, for instance, fantastic.
Yeah, we didn't talk
about
that.
4.5 stars.
I knew you were going to love it.
We'll talk about it at the end of the year. We can't
do
a whole review now.
I'm going to watch Malignant tonight,
I'm going to watch it tomorrow.
Okay.
So I am going to see it.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
I know. I've been wanting to see it, too. I will tell you another one that's kind of a sleeper. Not really well known because it was a Netflix release, but it is an original horror film, and it's called The Old Ways.
I gave it four stars. No shit.
It's high up on my list. It's probably going to make my top 10.
Wow.
It's worth watching. I really liked it. It's an exorcism film, but not your standard exorcism film. It has nothing to do with, like, you know, there's no Catholics involved and crucifixes and things. It's all like old, you know, Mexican folk horror stuff. It's really good.
Okay.
The Old Ways.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I recommend it if you want to see a cool movie.
Is there anybody involved that we would have talked about before?
No.
Okay.
There's a couple of faces that I recognize, character actors.
Sure.
But other than that, I don't know anybody in the movie, but I really liked it.
Nice. So, okay, so we spelled out what's going to happen for the rest of the season. What's going to happen after that, which, spoiler alert, I don't know yet. We'll get into that eventually, maybe about the new season. But, okay, what do you have coming up? Tonight, you have a St. Louis Exorcism
event. We have an
event.
Yeah, we have an event because my new book just came out.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that for those of you who are going to go back and listen to the podcast that we did 6 episodes on in our St. Louis season is now going to be badly outdated
because
it is...
we did what
you
we
know,
could
it was
what
done
had.
At the time when I still had a promise I had to keep as far as names and things go, but I
admire the hell out of you for doing
I don't have to keep that anymore, and so I finally put out the full, and as far as I know, this will be the last edition of the book. I cannot imagine there's anything else to tell, but that's what I said the last time.
Sure.
So you never know, but anyway, I guess we'll see. This edition is everything you've always wanted to know. Probably things you didn't want to know. But there's all the dirty laundry is in this new. In fact, it's 100 pages longer than the last.
No
edition.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of material here that I just could not use before, and
100
I can use
pages
now.
Though.
100 pages.
How does that compare to like any other like new editions of books you've done in the past?
You know, it just depends. I mean, a lot of times when I do a new edition of something, it's only because I've got, you know, some different stories I want to include. They're not really new. They're new to the book, maybe, but not new. This is new.
Right.
I mean, it's not anything that I found out yesterday. It's just I found it out 25 years ago. I just could never use it until now. And now I can use it, so people will not have seen it. So.
Okay.
Anyway, but other than that, I mean, we still have Dinner and Spirits events coming up. We do have some that are not sold out yet. We had to add a couple St. Louis Exorcism ones, and at this point,
I
don't know.
It's a busy time, man.
Yeah, it is. So we still have a few of those left. The only River Road tours we have left is the one in November, and it's like half full, and the one in December, which is, as of this recording, is about half full.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that'll be it for 2021. All of our rest of September and all of our October River Road tours are all full.
Just filled up.
So we've got, you know, of course, the regular tours in Alton still. We've got the tours in Chicago. Decatur is pretty much almost full.
Mm-hmm.
Springfield's still got stuff available. So there are things that are happening. We still have, you know, if you go to dinnerandspirits.com, you can see what events we have left. And we also started planning our annual Dead of Winter event, which will be February the 12th. This is going to be a good one. We're going to be at the Mineral Springs. By the time you guys hear this, we will have announced it on Friday the 17th. We're going to put everything up. People can get after hour tickets.
Okay.
We're going to have, Estes Method recordings, you know, that kind of cool headphone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
we're going to be doing that in the swimming pool at the Mineral Springs.
Ooh, no better place.
We've got some ladies who are coming in who are going to be doing a gallery reading. We're going to have an after hours ghost hunt. An after-hour bus tour. We're going to have an after-hours dinner. So we got a lot of stuff going on for that. And, of course, that's our big charity event that we do for the food drive.
It's the one time a year that I do something good.
Yeah, it's right, exactly. Exactly. It's a free event. You know, we do have the after-hour stuff, and all of that goes toward the food drives and stuff too, just like the t-shirts and all that stuff does. So, but all of that stuff will be up just probably right before you guys hear this episode. Mm-hmm. So,
and we'll do a podcast.
Yes,
there.
We will do a live
some
podcast.
Live,
we
cold
always
story.
Do. It's always a winter story. Yeah, yeah, we'll do something this year. I don't know what yet, but we'll work that out. So yeah, that'll be coming up soon. So if you go to AmericanHauntings.net, you can see all of the stuff for that once you hear this episode. So yeah. Yeah, busy awesome. Time, fun time.
Busy time, fun time. Yeah, this month is going to be crazy. I mean, the rest of the season's just going to be crazy in general. Especially as, like, things are opening up and closing
down. Yeah, people
want to
get out. I know, it's all over
the
place. But, you know, people want to get out and do stuff. So
they do.
We're, I think that's, you know, going to be cool.
We're making it happen. Speaking of that, though, one thing I did want to plug, Troy. I know I've shown you some of his stuff at, like, a random party or something that I think you had a while ago, but... on Netflix, there's a new comedy special from Bo Burnham called Inside.
Oh, yeah?
He directed it, wrote it, produced it, everything by himself in this. It's actually his guest house in his L.A. home. So he makes it seem like he was stuck in this one spot.
Right.
He wasn't.
Right.
But he did it all himself, and it's all about him just making silly songs in the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's depressingly beautiful, and I love it. And I just want to just to plug that because that's amazing. Okay, let's jump into some listener reviews here. We have a couple, two that are really nice, one that's funny that I want to talk about.
One that actually used the phrase, stay in your lane.
No,
that's
not
all I'm going to say.
No, I'm not doing that one.
I know. I'm just saying there was one that said that. I thought was hilarious.
It is. And it's funny. And I won't mention your name.
Yeah.
So this one is from Hilda Cupcakes, and it's titled The Best Podcast. It says, I've never been able to listen to any podcast. Usually I get bored halfway through an episode and move on. Same here. And I have to like edit them. So yeah. It says, American Hauntings has me enthralled. I love the way Troy describes and retells the history. I've made my way through all of the seasons and I'm thoroughly hooked and sad now that I have to wait a week between new episodes. That's awesome. I mean, yeah. thank you so much for that. This next one is from Mr. Giggler. It says, great historical details, the title. It says, I appreciate the detailed historical context you guys provide. Makes it so much more than opinions or hearsay, especially when it comes to the ghost stories. Look forward to future seasons. And yeah, that's kind of what we try to do, right? Yeah. Just be like, hey, this here's a ghost thing, but we don't know. Or like, you know, here's this funny little, you know, additive detail. This last one, oh gosh, I just had to include it because it's from Summer 2018 BX. It says, the storytelling part is good, and there's 4 stars, and I'm doing a bit, but I also like, I want to talk about it. It says, it's good that each episode is neatly divided into 2 parts, so you can choose to listen to one host / the narrative part or both. It's like the nicest way anybody's ever been like, Cody, I don't like your part. Right. I'm giving you guys a good review. But that's how we structured the show. So if people like that didn't want to listen to our half, they didn't have to. And so I can't be mad at it, is what I'm saying. Like, that's what I asked for. That's how we structured it. And like, dude, thanks. I mean, we got 4 stars out of it, and he was just honest about it. Like, cool. So yeah, iTunes, that you know what to do. Let's dive into this story. I'm very curious about, you know, this is a story I'd never heard about.
Really?
Honestly. Okay. And once you started getting into some of the details of who her family was and stuff, I was like more intrigued.
Yeah, well, she's, you know, she's been kind of forgotten, you know, not forgotten, but always was sort of a second banana to Marilyn Monroe, who was the, you know, the blonde pinup of the 50s and 60s. I mean, everybody thought of Marilyn. And, you know, so Jane Mansfield was kind of second in line. And then behind her was Mamie Van Doren, who most people do not know at all.
No.
But again, another, you know, another blonde bombshell from the era.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's not as well known to a lot of people because she just didn't do the kind of, wasn't in the kind of movies that Marilyn Monroe was. She never got those kinds of parts.
How is it like, okay, hold on. I want to give a little bit of the backstory real quick, and but then I have a question to ask, but just so I normally do it this way, like Vera Jane Palmer and born in Brian Maher, is that how you pronounce it? Okay, so I've always heard that as like it hardcore bands always name songs after that town, but I never knew what it was. Father dies early of a heart attack while driving. Mother works as a teacher, remarries, and moves to Dallas.
Not good luck with cars.
Good luck with cars. Yeah. Actually, you know what? Screw it. We can bounce
let's
around.
Just we went through this. Let's just talk about what you want to talk about. You don't have to go back through it.
Why is it so? Okay, so you. You mentioned she was, you know, playing third fiddle or whatever, you know, compared to like Marilyn Monroe and stuff. But like, I would think, and that maybe this is just me being a dude, but like she like had naked pictures in Playboy and it was a big thing. And she did things like scandalous things.
Well, because she couldn't get the parts that she wanted. I mean, like I said, she had an IQ of 163,
which is ridiculous.
She's a genius.
Ridiculous.
I mean, she was on genius level smart, but no one cared. They didn't care about that.
And
won all these beauty contests. I mean, in Texas when she was growing up, she won all these beauty contests. And she tried to get into good movies, and she just couldn't. I mean, the best chance she had of really making a name for herself was when she did the Steinbeck movie, The Wayward Bus. And it was a dramatic role, and they stuck it on the shelf. And it didn't come out for like 2 years. And by then, she'd already done all these bimbo roles, like Will Success Spoil Rock Hunter, where she shows up in a towel, and the girl can't help it. And those were the parts she was given. And so she just never got the kind of break that she wanted. She wanted to be a serious actress because, again, she's a genius. I mean, this woman was very, very smart. But she knew that that's not what they wanted to see. That's not what audiences wanted from her. So she decided to give them what they wanted.
Yeah.
You know, and so she did all these publicity stunts and, you know, with her.
I mean, love those, by the way.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. I mean, the thing was, that time period, you're talking about those big rocket ship looking bras and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, boobs were a huge thing. And for her, they were a huge thing. and so she's, every chance she got, you know, she would arrange an accident for her boobs to pop out because it got her all kinds of press.
The
2,000 photos, you know, in a single year when she was
ridiculous.
At Fox, that's an amazing amount. But because she was doing all of that kind of stuff. And
I just don't get why wouldn't that be enough?
Why
didn't I know her name, but I knew Marilyn Monroe?
It just wasn't because of the quality of the movies that she had.
Mm.
I mean, she didn't do that many movies, and all of them.
She won a Golden Globe?
Well, as Best New Star. but all of them were pretty forgettable.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a single person personally who's ever seen Will Success spoil Rock Hunter.
No, hell no. No.
I mean, obviously we didn't see the stage play, but I mean, they did a movie with Tony Randall and Joan Blondell. I mean, they were fairly big name people. Tony Randall especially went on to do all kinds of stuff. But who's seen the movie? Nobody. And The Girl Can't Help It was a novelty film that was really just a showcase for, you know, rock and roll singers.
Sure.
You know, in 1956 when the rock and roll was getting started.
You mentioned,
you were talking about Little Richard and, you know, Chuck, or the Fats Domino and the Platters and things like that.
Sure.
I've seen that one because I sought it out because I, you know, had an interest in the rock part of it,
even more
than Jane Mansfield. But, you know, it was cool to see her in something, to see her talking and you know, to actually see her roles. But she just didn't do that much stuff. Mm. And then, you know, she married Mickey and
Five days after the divorce, right?
Yeah.
And this is when, so I'm going through this and it says, gets divorced, marries actor, bodybuilder, Mr. Universe, Mickey Hargate, and 5 days later. And I was like, that last name sounds awfully familiar.
Right. I know, right?
So, yeah, Mariska Hargitay
is her daughter, and who was in the car when she died. And a lot of people don't know that.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody last night, and that came up, and they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, that's Jane Mansfield's daughter. And if you look at them side by side, you can see it. But
she is amazing.
Yeah, and she's great.
She's an EP now on SVU, too, and that show has been going 25 seasons or whatever.
And
so good.
So she really has gotten all the respect that her mother never got.
Yeah, well, fucking good for her.
I know, it is. It's great. But the thing about, I mean, the thing I guess that's sad about Jane is she did so much to try to build a career and, you know, within no time, she's doing burlesque and dinner theaters because just to eat.
Gotta pay bills.
Gotta pay the bills. You know, and people loved her. I mean, that was the thing. She just couldn't get good roles.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people were, you know, late 50s, early 60s, a little turned off by, I'm sure some people were kind of turned off by her stunts.
Yeah.
Women, probably, mostly.
You know? Where their husbands were looking at them too much.
Yeah.
Something I've noticed about you, Troy, like I've been asking about a couple of these episodes when it's not like a heavy hitter person. I'm asking, I'm always like, you know, why this person? I think it's just, I mean, you know this stuff obviously very well, but you'd love a classic tragedy, like the story, the Hollywood kind of.
I like to tell stories about people that I don't feel got what they deserved, you know, out of, and I don't mean that in a bad way, although sometimes it is in a bad
way.
You know, they didn't get what they deserved and they should have gotten worse.
We'll drag their name
through
the
mud.
But
most of the time, no. I mean, most of the time it's somebody like this, like Jane, who I think was, you know, probably tremendously talented. We just never got to see it.
Yeah.
You know, because she was never given the chance to do real work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was given these fluff roles, these bimbo roles, and that people went to see the movies, so that's what they kept giving her, and she knew she had to work, and she kept working. And she made a lot of money doing it. You know, she did really well for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the Pink Palace itself is crazy.
It sounds bougie.
It sounds awful. It sounds really awful, but... what's so funny about it is that, you know, like, and I think I mentioned that if it was anybody else, it would have been a really tacky eyesore. But because it was Jane, you're kind of like, oh, well, of course.
Okay.
It's like Liberace's house.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
This
is what you expect from her.
Like this prince or something.
So you kind of expect her to have this kind of crazy house. And she did. And, you know, I know, and I talked about her and Mickey not having the greatest marriage. I mean, it was a, you know, kind of, I mean, I know that there was some, you know, accusations of abuse and that, but, you know, it was the 50s. And so it wasn't, you know, all that uncommon for a guy to knock his wife around and nobody was going to do anything about it back then. But I do think he loved her. I really do. I just think he was just kind of a blockhead, you know? And I mean, because he did most of the work remodeling the house.
Yeah.
I mean, he painted everything. He put the mosaic tile in the bottom of
the
pool.
Oh, like himself?
And yeah, he did all that.
No
he did
shit.
The fireplace and, you know, a lot of the stuff he did. I mean, these were things that he did himself.
Yeah.
And so I think he really loved her, but I just think that, you know, I don't know. I think that her career just kind of got out of hand for him.
No, that's fair enough. Yeah. You talked about, even though like a lot of the stuff she did with the Pink Palace and the stunt she pulled. You said a lot of that dried up kind of by like 1959. I just wanted to point out that's when my parents were born.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
yeah.
That just to like put it in a frame of reference
right.
for me.
Right.
You said she was the first mainstream American actress to appear nude in the film Promises. You said photos from the film appeared in Playboy resulted in obscenity charges for Hugh Hefner. Can you teach me about the history of porn?
I mean,
I don't get it.
Playboy started out in the mid-50s and it was all just, it was cheesecake kind of stuff. And there were... there were boobs and that was all you could print because at the time it was there was still a big question as to whether or not you could send those out through the mail.
Federal lines.
So a lot of court cases got started and that's where you kind of get that famous thing one of the judges said about, well, you know, how do you know if it's porn? Well, I'll know it if I see it.
When I see it.
And so
Justice Thomas.
Yeah.
Whatever,
and so, I mean, Hugh Hefner was groundbreaking for the time. And, you know, this is the 1950s. I mean, this is like, you know, could you find a more misogynist era in the 50s, you know?
Nope.
I even talked about that with Paul Mansfield, Jane's first husband. He wanted her to just stay home and have kids.
Right.
She wanted to be in the movies,
so
you know?
They moved
and
to LA.
So they moved to LA. But yeah, so, you know, she did, she was, she was the first, you know, it wasn't, I mean, there's been porn since the advent of photography.
Sure.
I mean, so it's always been around.
Be the first thing I think of.
But she was the first mainstream actress, you know, that people had heard of who had done a nude scene in a movie. I mean, this wasn't like in the 70s when Deep Throat came out and
right.
they opened it in like real theaters
yeah.
and people went to see it. It wasn't that. It was meant to be. It was an actual film. It wasn't a porno. It just happened to have nudity in it. And nobody had done that before. Not in a mainstream film. But again, it's a lousy movie. But the problem is that it. Or not the problem, but for Jane, got her name out there, and
yeah.
it kept her working. It kept her, you know, getting paid. And you know, the thing with, and you know, the there's been a question as to whether the obscenity charge and all that was just a stunt too.
Well, sure.
You know,
so, well,
I mean, it's Hefner. I mean, he was as canny about publicity as she was.
I'm sure. I mean, it's probably worth him to pay that fine.
Yeah, yeah,
to
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm, that man.
So, well, he'd also, you know, had published the first nude photographs of Marilyn Monroe, too.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
From the calendar that she did. That was the first issue of Playboy, I believe.
Interesting. So, yeah. I don't like him, but I respect the marketing strategy.
Oh, yeah. He definitely was a groundbreaking, you know,
well, who would have
publisher
thought?
For the time.
People want to see naked women. Who would have thought?
Well, and you know, but it wasn't just that. It was a mainstream magazine.
Right.
I mean, Esquire also began having some nudity in it too.
No shit.
Yeah, there still is sometimes, but mostly
really?
Back in the day, Esquire would often have not like pinup spreads,
yeah,
centerfolds,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
but would use some nudity in some of their articles
huh.
and things.
I did not know that.
But it was at the time, it was a mainstream magazine you could buy on the newsstand. You didn't have to go to a porno shop in Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
You could just get it in a regular magazine store on a newsstand. And it was, you know, he had designed that as he could say, well, people read it for the articles,
mm-hmm.
and which wasn't a lie.
Knew. Yeah, right.
Because
right.
the articles
were. So that's
were,
where they came from.
Right. The articles were worthwhile. The interviews, the movie reviews, the interviews they did with authors and things. You know, you had a lot of, you know, Steinbeck and Updike and all these people who were, you know, highbrow literary people, because doing an interview or something or an article about you in Playboy was a big deal.
So it didn't start out as a nudie magazine.
Oh, no, it was still a nudie magazine.
That,
I mean,
right,
it was
from
an
the
excuse,
beginning?
Right. It always had nude
okay,
photos
okay.
in it. But it was meant to be like
more
an upscale
uh-huh.
kind of thing, right?
Right?
A gentleman's magazine.
Okay,
right,
got it. Oh,
right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's, but so, you know, the fact that she shows up in it is, you know, was good for her career at the time. You know, it was not a bad place to be.
Yeah.
In Playboy, you
Damn.
Know, so.
Let's talk about the Church of Satan
oh,
and the Anton LaVey stuff. So,
I know, right?
And just, I think a lot of people listening to our podcast will already know at least a little bit about it. But anytime you hear Satanic Temple, Church of Satan, or whatever, mm-hmm. like most people start to freak out. And it's
yeah.
like, okay, it's
yeah.
actually not what you
and,
think.
And well, and not only that, but, you know, Anton LaVey formed the Church of Satan
to
for the
fuck
same
people?
For the same reason that Jane Mansfield was having accidental nip slips
yeah.
on in TV shows. It was all about publicity. The
yeah,
guy
yeah.
was a showman. He was a marketer. And the Church of Satan is not about worshiping Satan.
And it's
I mean, it's really hard to explain, but if you go, believe it or not, if you're puzzled by it, go to their website and read their frequently asked questions section. Yeah. It tells you everything you need to know.
Do the same thing for the Satanic Temple and read their tenets and stuff.
It's the same kind of thing. And it's, you know, it's really about just do what you want to do as long as you don't hurt people.
Yeah.
And that's basically what
it is.
What's
the phrase?
You know, it has not, they don't even believe in Satan or, I mean, they're atheists. They don't believe in actual Satan.
Right. It's just funny.
But, you know, he started this with the, you know, it made it, he got a lot of headlines and he got a lot of newspaper coverage and a lot of magazine coverage because it was shocking at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was on the cover of Look magazine. There were layout spreads in Life magazine. And, you know, it was really about cavorting around with a bunch of naked women. I mean,
of course.
Every magazine spread, that's what's in there. And he didn't even run it like a cult. He wasn't trying to make money off people. He just wanted publicity.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't like, you know, brainwashing
that's
his
malicious.
Members because that's bad. I mean, that's something hurtful to people, and that's not what it's about.
It's not what they're about.
So, you know, I think what happened here, and there, I've got a book called California Infernal, and I wish I wish I had the author of it, but it's mostly a photography book.
Oh, it's not your book. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't write it.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I didn't write
okay.
it. It's a book I have on my collection,
got it,
and
got
it's
it.
About Anton LaVey, Jane Mansfield, around that era right there, and it's filled with photographs of her at the Satanic Temple. With all of these photos they took with her, like taking communion and things. And there are photographs from the Satanic Temple. There are photographs of him just like hanging out at her house and hanging out with different celebrities and stuff. I mean, it was all about rubbing shoulders with fame and fortune. And so I think that he saw her as a good way to get publicity, even though maybe her, you know, her spotlight had dimmed a bit by then, but still. Even if she was a C celebrity at the time or a B celebrity, it was still celebrity.
That's mutually beneficial.
And with her, she's seeing a guy who's in all the newspapers and all the magazines, and you know, and this was a good way to get publicity. And of course, LaVey being LaVey, who was always about publicity, mm-hmm. you know, cashed in on all of these stories about the curse after she died.
Yeah. I mean, bad luck? Is it just
life? I mean, I we don't even know if there was really, the only people we have that are aware of this curse was LaVey.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to take his word for it that there was a curse.
Yeah. I cursed him.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, I love Jane, but boy, I tried to tell her to stay away from him and she wouldn't do it. And so really that's the only person whose word we have for there to be any curse. But it's an interesting element to the story.
Sure.
You know, as far as this supposed curse that, you know, was there really a curse? Did it, you know, is that what killed her? I mean, you know, I'm going to say probably not, but,
right.
you know, it's still an interesting, and there are some bad luck here that happens.
Yes.
I mean, a whole bunch of it in a row. So.
Right, and it all ends basically with a bad car accident
yes.
where what she, her husband, driver...
Well, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. She's doing a supper club in Biloxi, and she has to go to New Orleans.
I've done that drive, too.
Right, she does, and she was going there for a morning television appearance. And it was like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning when they mm-hmm. left. Kids were asleep in the back seat. Brody, who had a cast on his leg, was sitting in the front. There was the 19-year-old driver, Ron Harrison, who worked for the club, and the club had said, well, I'll have Ron drive you down there.
Right.
And Jane's in the passenger seat, and off they went in this convertible. And it's, you know, it's the middle of the night. It's, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and he goes to pass this truck, not realizing that there was a semi in front of the truck. He didn't see it till it was too late.
Yeah.
And it peeled the top off the car like a tin can. I mean, it just...
So you think the kids are laying down? That's
why
saved them?
They were laying down asleep. Mm. So they got injured from flying glass and metal, but at least they weren't killed.
Oof.
Because with that, we would not have Law & Order SVU.
We would not have Law & Order
exactly.
SVU. Olivia Benson.
Yeah, would not be around if not for the fact that she was asleep lying down in the back seat. So...
Jeez.
Yeah. It's in it, and it's, you know, like I said, there a lot of stories got started about her being decapitated, and that
it was a wig.
It was a wig. Yeah, it was one of her wigs.
Yeah, should.
That's what he saw, a bloody wig laying. He thought it was her head, and that's how the story got started.
Right, but during the memorial service, 30 people
claimed
to see amber-colored bulbs suddenly flare up, blah, 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 all that.
But there was a lot of weird things happening around the house. There were lot of people who really believed that Jane haunted the place.
I mean, why wouldn't you at that point?
And well, because there was, and not only, you know, had she been, her life been cut off quickly like it was, she loved the place, so that's no surprise that she'd come back. But the big thing was, is there was such a, you know, controversy over her estate.
Right.
Because technically she was still married to her third husband when it happened. So he and his lawyer just came in and cleaned the place out.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that the kids, you know, weren't getting what they were supposed to get, you know, because of this. And then, you know, all of this stuff going on, she was very unhappy about it. That's what, you know, people who were closest to her believed, like her, you know, her longtime assistant and things, and then who ended up finally quitting and saying, I'll never go back in that house.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Jane is there and she's very unhappy about what's going on.
Mm. So. Well, okay, what do you make of, can you tell me a little bit about Cass Elliot?
One of the owners of that.
Yeah,
well,
not,
you know,
not choking on a ham sandwich. Okay. Is that a thing?
Well, the thing was, is that as you, you know, you go and there's, you know, bad things.
Yeah.
And then, so you're looking for, when you're putting these stories together, like you're looking for anything bad that happens.
Sure,
well,
sure.
So one of the owners of the house is Cass Elliot from the Mamas and the Papas.
Yeah.
And she dies in England, you know, while she's the owner of the house, even though she didn't die there.
Mm-hmm.
But the story always was that Mama Cass had died choking on a ham sandwich.
Why is that?
Because she was a large girl. And so I guess somebody thought that was funny.
Yeah.
She didn't. She died of a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
But somehow that story got started. And it's kind of like Jane being decapitated in her car.
Mm.
She wasn't decapitated. And Cass didn't die choking on a ham sandwich. She died of a heart attack, but that's been an urban legend that's been around forever.
That's just
so.
Rude.
But I thought it was just kind of funny to throw that in there because Shane wasn't decapitated either.
Right,
so.
Right. Well, after that,
Ringo Starr.
Ringo Starr. So it took a while for him to actually get the house to not be pink.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I guess he just, well, pink's probably not my style. So. But
well,
yeah,
the
they
white
couldn't.
Album.
They, and you know, really, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, how in the world would you cover that pink?
It'd be,
and not only
nightmare.
That, but and then she had the sandstone, like, you know, crushed up in it, so it would sparkle.
Right.
That would be impossible to cover.
It would be.
And then, you know, but of course, legend has it that as they kept repainting it, you know, they're bringing in chemists and paint consultants, and they can't figure out why it won't cover.
Right.
It's because it's bright pink
of
paint,
course.
You
and,
know,
and,
but
and
it makes a good story.
A chemist for Ringo is just a guy who sells him LSD.
Right, exactly,
right?
Yeah.
I don't know why it won't not be pink.
Yeah.
Gosh. So, okay, the house is eventually passed to Welsh singer,
Engelbert Humperdinck.
This is the
Have
funniest
Have you not
name.
Heard of him?
No,
oh.
I laughed so hard at that name, and I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those names that I always just, I don't,
come on.
Honestly, at the top of my head, I can't, I know, you know, I know he's a singer.
It's like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is like that, isn't it? But he's always, I always think of him as one of those kind of like Tom Jones, Wayne Newton kind of singers,
okay.
right? And I couldn't tell you anything. I didn't even look him up, although I guess I should have. But I love to always say his name because I think it's so funny. and as it turns out, that's not like even his real name.
What? You changed it to that?
Yeah, I was like reading.
For
it was like I was
sake.
Reading one of those articles about, you know, oh, stars, what their name used to be. You know, John Wayne was, you know, and all this stuff. And his name was something else, and he
John
changed
Smith.
It to Engelbert Humperdinck. But you don't forget it.
Right.
That's
well,
the thing. So,
his
but anyway,
name.
He bought the house in 77 and had it blessed by a priest because, you know, he believed the place was haunted. I mean, he said that he had seen Jane there, or ghost was there, and all kinds of. And I love the story about the earthquake.
Yeah.
There was an earthquake in there, like in the backyard. Heart sinks into the ground, and he's like freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my God, Jane's really pissed now. And it was a wading pool that filled in, and it just collapsed because
of
the earthquake.
Is it just a common thing just to build over shit like that?
I don't know.
Like,
apparently. I mean, probably Ringo probably did it.
Well,
you know, when
he's
trying
to repaint.
Well, that, and he's trying to repaint the house so that it's not pink anymore. And so he's probably, the swimming pool was too big to fill in. So you've got a giant heart-shaped swimming pool that says, I love you, Janie, in the bottom and you're Ringo Starr, right? So probably they filled in the wading pool for the kids at some point. But.
Gosh. Well, the kids got to go back and take some keepsakes.
Yes.
So Olivia Benson and family got to take some things.
She took an ornamental copper shield that Mickey had engraved on. So.
Oh,
that's... But see, then I had to put that last part in. Mickey wouldn't go back to the house.
Yeah.
Because he said that as far as he was concerned, the house died when Jane died. So I think it's one of those things like, I know we haven't gotten to them yet, but like Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever she would, you know, they were married for a while and they split up because, again, he thought she was going to quit acting. You know, he's Mr. Baseball and he thought she's going to quit acting and stay at home and have kids. It's never going to happen.
Idiot.
But they stayed friends forever. In fact, I think he was always in love with her.
Of course.
And anytime she was in trouble, who would she call? That's who she called. She'd call Joe. Well, after she died, he sent roses to her crypt for the rest of his life.
No
Every
shit.
Week, fresh roses were delivered to Marilyn's crypt at the cemetery from Joe. And I think maybe the same kind of thing with Mickey. I think he always loved her, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought that was something that he said that I thought was... You know, kind of moving.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Although I'm sure he said it in an almost impronounceable accent because you can't understand what he says. It's like listening to mushmouth Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's if you ever hear him talk, you'll understand. Look him up on YouTube or something. It's quite an accent.
Fair enough.
But he's Hungarian. I mean, I'll give him a break. I mean, he speaks
more languages than I do.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. But he also, you know, he made a spot for himself. It's Mr. Universe, man. Dude was huge.
Also, Arnold was too.
Arnold was too. He's a big dude.
Man, jeez. So. Okay. Well, now that I feel very insignificant. I just wanted to give a couple quick shout-outs to our recent patrons. Again, you are the people that keep us doing what we're doing and be able to put out bonus content and stuff. So I want to give a quick shout-out to Stephanie and then Josie Mae Dayton, which is my sister's cat. I'm not kidding. My sister signed up for the Patreon, and she put it as her cat.
Okay.
She's recently married and decided to add her cat to this. And she thought I wouldn't recognize it, and she told
me,
but I was like, had I seen it?
That's funny.
So thank you, Cassidy and Josie and Stephanie.
Yeah.
And, oh, boy. Okay, well, it is now time for our Ghostwriter segment. So if you have a question or comment about the world of the macabre, you can email us at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com. This email comes to us from Leslie, and it says, "Hey, Cody, and Troy, of course, in parentheses. Haha, Troy, you're in parentheses. It says, I hadn't had a chance to be able to leave you any kind of review because, well, I don't have an iPhone, so I listen to the podcast on Spotify, which doesn't have a way to leave a review, which is really lame, in my opinion, for Spotify. I listen to the podcast.
Yeah, they don't do that.
They don't, right. And they're so big. But anyway, I listen to the podcast all the time and look forward to each new episode. I tell everyone that will listen to my ramblings about ghosts, hauntings, etc. about your podcast, even if they're not into the ghostly stuff like me. I tell them that if they're into true crime stuff to listen to your show. I love how everything is presented with the story at the beginning and the dialogue between the two of you afterward. Troy has a very unique style of storytelling that makes it fun and interesting."
That's a nice way of putting it.
It is. And then the questions that Cody asks really help clarify the details that sometimes confuse me. Thanks, Cody. The fun banter between you is always entertaining. And yes, some of us do listen all the way to the end just for the extra giggles. Love what you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to many more seasons. Thanks, Leslie." That's very nice. And again, somebody even messaged me the other day on Instagram. And I don't know, it's probably like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I was like barely awake. And they just said like, "Hey, like, thanks
Who
for...
Who checks their messages at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Sometimes you're just on your phone, you're one-eyeing it, and you can't sleep. You're anxious. And they just said like, "Hey, like, thanks for doing the podcast. Like, I really appreciate it." And I was like, dude, like, that really just, it means a lot. Like, it really does. Because sometimes it's tough, dude. Like, we have to go, you have to write so much. I have to edit so much. We have to record. And it's just nice to know that, like, even one person.
People enjoy it.
People enjoy it. It makes me want to get up and do it again.
It's nice when people say, "Oh, you know, I found out about this from the podcast." I'm like, "Oh, cool." So, good. All those ad dollars I spent wasted. So, you know.
We could have been doing a podcast the whole time. But yeah, because, no, I don't know. A lot of it's like, you know, people trolling and telling us, like, you know, like, "Hey, you guys suck" or whatever. But, like, it's so nice when people come out and they're just like, "Hey, I like what you're doing." Like, this, and what I really love is when people are like, "Hey, this helped me get through a tough day one time," you know? And I'm like, well, shit.
Nice.
Like,
yeah.
That's just. I don't know. I just appreciate it.
Yeah,
I'm
me
feeling
too.
Sentimental yeah. today on September 11th.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I know. So it's just a day you're thinking a lot.
Yeah.
All right, man. That's all I got. Is there anything else we need to talk about?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
I think we're good. So.
We should just call it. I should just hit
yeah,
the button.
Yeah, they could just be done. So as far as I'm concerned. So, but anyway, I do want to thank everybody, just like Cody did. We do yeah. really appreciate it. And, you know, leave us... You know, like and share, you know, or whatever they
like
say.
And subscribe.
Like and subscribe. But no, if you get a chance to leave us a review, that's great. We appreciate it. I think iTunes is about the only place you can do it. I don't know if there's any place else. But I had somebody contact me the other day, so they found the show through Pandora. So, I mean, it's all over the place.
We've been getting a lot of that.
Yeah, it's all over the place. So we're really happy about that. This is... I know I'm starting to complain, even though it's me complaining about... me
thing
choosing doing. All of the things I'm doing for the podcast. But, you know, I hope that you guys have enjoyed this season because honestly, I have really enjoyed it. I just feel like we've been doing this for a really long time now.
Yeah.
And we've been stuck in Hollywood for a very long time. And
I've learned a lot.
I know. And it has been fun. And I've gotten to talk about some things I might not have gotten to talk about anywhere else. I don't know. If I just sit around and talk to this stuff to Lisa, she does not listen to me. So at all.
Ooh,
if
yeah.
movie stuff comes up, she yeah. immediately shuts down. So
yeah.
Oren is like the only person I can talk to
that's
and
fair.
You as far as movies go. It's just the three of us.
Yeah.
That's about it. So I don't always get a chance to do that. So it's fun when I get to. So anyway,
I'm happy to be here for you,
yes,
man.
Yes.
It's
yes,
not that I'm selfish so. And I like this stuff
yeah.
too. I'm doing this
that's
for
okay.
you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So.
Oh gosh. Okay. Well, I gotta do it. This episode of the American Haunting Podcast is written by Troy
you know what?
Taylor.
Since you,
and
since you banned
out my
since
meat.
You banned
if you're not a regular listener of the podcast, we'll hope you'll check
Orson
out
the
dose of history, hauntings, legends,
how about
of American history.
How about
what,
a little
what
Engelbert Humperdinck instead?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, you can find and subscribe to the show, or you can unsubscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere you want to listen to your favorite shows. See the website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com for more info about the show, notes, photos, links, and more. I wish you guys could see how much
seconds.
Troy was loving what he's doing right now. Really
I was lip-syncing that. But,
if you're a regular listener, we hope you take the time to review us on the podcast app, like we
off.
Talked about, and share the show with your friends, neighbors, relatives,
Engelbert
people you pass on the street, Benedict Cumberbatch, whoever.
Yeah, just
share it with Benedict.
To Benedict Cumberbatch.
If we could get one review
Engelbert
from Benedict,
Humperdinck.
We couldn't and wouldn't do the show without you. If you're
actually,
a fan,
I should look and see what his real name was.
Yes, you should.
Because
then
I'm kind of curious.
That American Hauntings is not just this podcast. It's books, tours, events, a bunch of random-ass history lessons that no one needs, and more in
Somebody
our main website.
Googled Engelbert Humperdinck songs. Well, so did I, but I didn't know that was that one.
Bro,
so.
That was you. For
no,
those
I did.
Of
well,
you
I just found out.
Who
so.
Write to us and tell us you wish we'd posted shows more often, well, we're getting better at that, and you can have
his
fresh
real
content.
Name is his real name is Arnold George Dorsey. Why
no,
would you pick Engelbert Humperdinck to be your name?
It's like in Parks and Rec when that guy changes his name from Dante Fierro to the other cologne guy. It doesn't matter. Anyway, that's not the only perk that you get either. There are discounts, shirts, stuff in the mail, all kinds of things. And for those who don't
understand
how important...
Oh my God, you know what his net worth is?
Not
$180
not
million. Dollars.
Back in 1920?
No, Engelbert, he's still alive. He was born in 1936. He's 85 years old. And he's worth $180 million.
We should see if he
was sponsored. I should change my name to Engelbert Humperdinck, if that's what it would take.
Humperdinck. Go back and listen to the first season and
Holy
then listen to this
cow.
One. Yeah, that's right. We didn't make any terrible jokes like this. And Patreon is what made it all get better or worse. Check it all out at patreon.com.
You know what his nickname is?
American Hauntings.
Hump.
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. If you have comments about the show, suggestions, reviews, jokes, or just want to tell us what you really think of us.
That's a good one.
Oh, boy. So many jokes. We're reachable via email, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Are you done?
Messages in a bottle.
God, I did
pigeon,
talk through this entire
Telegram,
thing, didn't I? Sorry about that. Do you want to start over?
Till
so
next
maybe you can
time.
Do the whole thing? Or
goodbye. So long.
Bye.
See you later. Oh, boy. Humperdinck or whatever his name is.